every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock. And again, if you just tuned in, we do stream live online as well at www.cfrc.ca. Now, coming up in the second hour, we're just going to start where we left off in the first hour. Again, in the second day's mid-afternoon session, you're going to hear readings by Susan McMaster, Doris Fisher, and Susan J. Atkinson. Just my usual start of the hour announcement that occasionally some poetry, spoken word, or music played on this show may contain strong language, but all is played in its entirety with content unedited to honor the creative integrity of both the author and the piece. Let's just jump into where we left off in the last hour. Hope you enjoy it.
Up next, Ottawa poet Susan McMaster has published some 40 books and recordings and read and performed across Canada with Andrew McClure, Colin Martin, and First Draft. She originated the blended form word music and performed and recorded with Sugarbeet Music and Poetry and Geode Music and Poetry with Alric Hubner and Jennifer Giles. McMaster founded Canada's first national feminist and arts magazine, Branching Out, edited the Living Archives series of the League of Canadian Poets, and has served as chair of its Feminist Cause and League president. Projects include Dangerous Graces, Women's Poetry on Stage, commissioned by the Great Canadian Theatre Company, and Convergence, Poems for Peace, which brought poetry and art from across Canada to parliamentarians for the millennium. Prize placements include the Ottawa Book Awards, Acorn Plantos People's Poetry Prize, Art Magazine's Best Poem of the Year, Archibald Lampman Award, and Montreal International Poetry Prize. Grounded is her newest collection, and there are copies over there. And before I forget, I'd just let you know at the end, there are copies of books too, so you might want to check that out. Let's bring up Susan McMaster.
We canoe through sky, over spruces and pines, veer over rock faces, shadowed and steep, paddling for the summit of the hills across the lake. May and the nights head toward zero, but the sun sets amber later every day. A counterpoint of loon calls bounces across the lake. Mergansers grumble, paddle around the bay. A fox prances after them with ducklings in mind as we turn toward the shore. We land in a V of sand, splash over the side, pull the boat in, then bumble up the path in wet boots and socks to the wood-fired stove. So many years, and still we are here, in the last globe of sun beaming off polished water. The tea on the top of the stove is still warm. I thought I'd remind us that the rain and thunderstorms of yesterday also fill our lakes and rivers. That's from our cottage up in the hills around Ottawa. My new book, Grounded, is in a number of sections. Too many to read you one from each, but I will read a few. So let me see what I thought should be one. Okay, that was one. Oh, here's two. All right. One of the sections is called Masked, and I will read the intro haiku and then the first poem. What wild face hovers here, unmade, under bed? Masked. Sometimes the mask slips, and I'm confronted with my belief that I am the most important one. The rat under the oven stuck on the glue skin trap is safe from my reach, but not safe from dying, slow and hard. But how can I release it? I dare not pull it out, even to crack its skull. Have no toxic smoke to quickly fog its brain. One rat muscled struggle and it might leap free, teeth bared and claws scrabbling for my eyes. Easy pity fills me at the pit-pat, pit-pat of its feet and teeth banging against the oven floor. Earplugs tonight. Bad dreams. I may be able to block it out, mask it, subdue. The rat cannot be comforted. We'll go on a big turnaround. The director over there told me no erotica. Well, I come from Ottawa. We don't do erotica in Ottawa. This is about as good as it gets. It's called political love. Those fine, upright thighs, sir, suit those ministerial robes. I am beguiled by your pantoufles, overcome by your fortunate front, fluffed by those pesky, frisky, white gaunts. Bring your rod and scepter this way. If there's a pause in the laws and guffaws in the little boy's business, while the girls in the house yank their pigtails out of inkwells and sigh at Sandboxian antics in the gray-boned attics of our peaceable buttresses. Oh, soliloquy, my solitude, you hunk of harmonious speechery, you TV strutter born to shake your silver locks and polished gambrels to astonish the plebs and puff up your politicals every night on the evening news. Oh, won't you address my undress under the swelling scrutiny of your fable-filled tower? Let the other parties glower. Okay. A special day is coming up. Has already happened. Is coming up? Has already happened. Mother's Day. Has already happened?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. Oh, I remember. I got a big bouquet of flowers. Yes, thank you. You smile, lean towards the orange tree on the nursing home sill, finger its small fruit shading into gold. How lovely, you say, stroking the sun on the leaves. I reach out for your hand. You hold on like a baby, grasping for life. How lovely, I agree. How beautiful. I'd like now to read one poem from an earlier book. It's called Crossing Arcs, Alzheimer's, My Mother, and Me. And it consists of the poems I wrote as she descended into the disease, and I would not publish them without having her hear them. So I read them to her, and she made the most astonishing comments. And so the book is a dialogue between the two things. I have a copy here. I think this is the last copy here. People do like it. So, hands. She takes off her boots, coat still buttoned, turns from the hall into the apartment she left a week before. One final trip to pick up final things. Steps through the arch into the living room. Her hands come together, fold around each other, as if against cold. The couch is gone. her lamp, her chair, the floor a mess of movers' tracks. A few more steps. She stops, bends her head into my shoulder. I put my arms around her. Her hands between us, still closed around something no one can hold. Acceptance and loss, holding on to life and what it was. Okay, of course, we all age. Let's see if I can find this one. These are the poems of age. These are the poems of age, the plain-spoken ones that have no ecstasies to offer, no wild metaphors to twist your frontal lobes, to massage your cerebellum around, astound your hormones into fight or flight. Just words, a few to say, sometimes gratitude overcomes melancholy. Sometimes despair is joy upside down, and a word can flip it. Sometimes I wait for you here in my soft bed and know you will come. Grounded. Beyond my window, snow falls from a great height. My world becomes small. Now what? The final puzzle. After a long life of throwing the casual riches of cognition at everything that comes and mostly flying through on a guess without a prayer, it no longer works. Intuition doesn't carry me to neat and easy solutions. A quick glance at a puzzle after a good night's sleep doesn't trick it into revealing the twist of its designs. Even prayer is not a charm. These days, I need to deliberate. I need to work hard, studiously, tediously, check all passable paths for logical conundrums, track down the blocks and slips on the easy path to failure, and fix each minor one before limited success. The future hovers, grinning. Ravel. Well, Mom, now it's me. It's not the loss of memory that worries me, but the loss of words. Words that have spun my life, woven my age. Poetry transforms, but words can't save me from this. Right now, I can't even remember the title of the book I wrote when you were diagnosed. Tangled, Undone. I'm the age you were then, before you unraveled. Still remember the subtitle, Alzheimer's, My Mother and Me. Words written with a steady hand, a working brain. Now, Alzheimer's, my daughters and me, entering the fray. I don't want to leave you with that. So, before the last poem, I'm going to read you, and I never do this, but it's here. You're all writers and friends. This is a totally new poem. I penciled a few things, which I hope I can smile. Hope I can read. And, you know, we find things happen, and what is the answer? I thought I wouldn't write again, and I have written very little since that diagnosis. Two poems. This is the third, and I think I see a turning. Okay? It's called Today, for those who love me. Small things today. I can pick up a coffee cup with my right hand. Today, a blue heron, black against blazing sky, perches above the Rideau. Today, a racing boy swerves widely on his bike to avoid my path, and an older man smiles as he walks his bike across the bridge, and I say, "Thoughtful of you." Today, a breeze sends sun rustling through the leaves of the riverside walk. A white moth flutters across in front of my knees. A crow caws. What does he caw? Bzzz, I guess. Lazy. A crow caws lazy. Once, twice, three times. Then wings slowly away while their partner stays to peck. So much I can't catch in this limited net. A black squirrel poised on a quizzical and hopeful on purple blooms, and a purple t-shirt on a passing jogger. White fleabane, such a name. Say sundrop, say daisy smile. And green, green everywhere. Green, green, still June. Here for one more day, then out of sight, out of mind. But here in these tender, leafy, brushing hands and their light whispers of now. Oh, look and listen. Softly where I walk, grasses bend to drop seeds for next year's rise. A bee decides I'm not a flower. Water stills, then waves and ripples at the shore for my husband and my children. Tiny blue dragonflies flicker around my feet, and a chest thrust robin warms me from the nest. Oh, look, look, today. For those I love. Thank you, and it's my beloved. One last piece. You gave us a very interesting disquisition, followed up by some other people, about the muse, what it is, what it isn't, where it comes from. This is my take on how to write and what we write. Muse. Oh, how to ride that note, string of poised freedom over the abyss. You tug me, tug, and I promise more, more than I know how to do, to fill with light, sound, tone, the hollow gasp of mouth on mouth, stuttering heart that frays into air, word, tone, amber embrace, stroke of fingers, lyricals of fire, willowing through melodious weave, unrolling, oh, hold and you and rest and you. Meld and revel in mellifluous resound, singing such sense to where we wish we could always be, if all was possible. And all was song. Thank you.
Let's give Sue another hand. Coming up next, Doris Fisher is the Ottawa author of two poetry collections, If I Were a River, Silver Bowl Publishing, 2023, and Locked in Different Alphabets, Silver Bowl Publishing, 2020, which was a finalist for the 2021 Archibald Lampman Award. She has published two chapbooks, The Binders and Sasanka, Wildflower. She was the recipient of the 2017 John Newlove Award and Tree Press's 2016 Chapbook Award for The Binders, also a nominee for the BP Nickel Award. Her poems have appeared in a variety of journals and anthologies across Canada and the United States. She serves as a first reader for ARC Poetry Magazine. She is a retired business communications professor and enjoys playing the piano and spending time with her family. Let's bring up Doris.
Good afternoon, everyone. Put that down for a sec. Put my glasses on. It's so great to be here and reading with so many amazing poets. And thank you to Bruce for organizing this wonderful poetry event and his hard work putting together the anthology. And I'm going to be reading from my second book, If I Were a River. And most of my poems today are going to focus on family poems. So some of them are emotional for me.
Could you read a little bit about it, please?
Sure. So I'm going to be reading from If I Were a River. And a lot of the focus today will be on my family poems. And some of them are emotional for me. Can everyone hear me better? I'm going to use my teacher's voice, too.
Please do.
Yes. Yes. So the first poem I'm going to read is I've got the band. I can't compete with the band. So can everyone hear? Okay. So the first poem I'm going to read is called Tremors. My father's voice rumbles, a repertoire of Reader's Digest jokes, fills gaps in conversations. Anecdotes slide off his tongue. His large hands open the fridge before and after every meal, a biting hunger from war days. Our arguments boil over into the living room. His heated silences stifle my breath until I say sorry. To restore peace, my mother says. I navigate my father's wheelchair through the nursing home garden, grasp his hands to steady tremors. I remove the gold chain and cross around his neck, touch his cool cheek. My hands tremble. 2. My father, dressed in suit and tie, brown tweed cap, is running, leather briefcase under his arm. He barely glances my way. I chase after him. Where are you going? I'm working, he says. Why do you need to work? You're dead. My mother stands on the front porch, doesn't wave goodbye. My next poem is about my grandmother, or babcia, as we say in Polish, as we called her. Nightly rituals in our shared bedroom. You kneel in front of the bed, pray the rosary. You ask if I'm asleep. Don't wait for a response. Nightly deluge of advice. Stand this way to look slimmer. Don't slump. Let your future husband think he's always right. You retell the prank you played, how you hid your fiancé's fedora every time he'd visit. Your gush of girlish giggles, the only man you dated, the grandfather I wish I'd met. You dole out your sufferings in faltering whispers, both parents dead from Spanish flu, home demolished in the Warsaw Uprising, husband's body in the scorched rubble, my mother's near death after the war. Weighted silence when I probe further. I'm dying, aren't I, you ask me. No one here tells me anything. You didn't bother the nurses when in hospital. Walked yourself to the bathroom the day you died. Now, my mother, like my parents, went through concentration camps, Second World War, being of Polish descent.
And my mother died unexpectedly of a stroke at 69. What does it mean to lose your mother? A sudden wind scattered her rose petals. My heart twisted into a fist. Years of blistering Julys. Throat closed. Eyes scratched by dust. Unrelieved by tears. Summer after summer, the clematis withering in our garden. My mother appears to me as I twirl in my wedding dress and white runners. Her laughter, candlelight in the darkness. She tells me to ignore my father's words, the biggest mistake of your life. A week before we marry, the clematis, a plethora of purple, a murmur of her in the air. The next one is my title poem, If I Were a River. If I were a river, I'd flow between this world and a parallel universe where my departed dwell. I'd be greeted by you, my loved ones, splash on shore, rest under another sun. I'd restore your baritone, father, return with your sky painting, mother, the tinkle of your voices. Fragments of their color sounds float on my waters. Now, my mother, my father, my brother George, and my grandmother, Babcha, they've all passed away. But I consider myself very fortunate because they visit me in my dreams. And we do all kinds of things together. Sometimes we have tea, sometimes we have dinner, sometimes we travel together. This next poem is called Waiting. Lit cigarette in one hand, red clutch purse in the other, my mother is waiting at the bus stop at the corner of Montgomery and Sherbrooke. An Air Canada suitcase on the pavement. Wait, I say, I need to pack. Her voice directs, don't forget the crystal vase, the one that held your first red rose bouquet, and the lint brush. I cannot find my suitcase. I throw my jeans, three summer dresses, roller skates, a frying pan, a purple striped hoodie into a green garbage bag. I cannot find my shoes. I race around the apartment, past crumpled sheets, past my younger self sitting on the sofa reading Cosmopolitan. Uncooked porridge stares at me with two raisin eyes in the kitchen. Wait, I'm not ready. I cry down to my mother through the open kitchen window, but she has vanished. A chihuahua tied to the cement post is waiting, waiting for someone. The scent of fresh lavender and laundry soap, an element burns hot on the stove. Porridge cooking, its two raisin eyes, bubbles of heat. The next one is called, My Departed and I Travel to Bustling Cities. Father wears a backpack, bulging with Seth Thomas clocks. Mother, in fox fur, ostrich feathered hat. Babcha dances a polka in a crowded outdoor cafe. George drives by in a red rescue fire truck. Father tinkers with his antique clocks in the Copernicus Hotel's foyer. Hand me that sprocket over there. As if I have nothing else to do. He and I stop for lunch at the Polska Deli. I'll pay, we say, holding up identical canvas money bags inscribed with dollar signs. The deli meat counter transforms into a revolving display of amber necklaces. Choose one. My father's unexpected gift to me. George drives by in the red rescue fire truck. Babcha dances a polka in the outdoor cafe. Mother calls out my name in a voice I can still hear. Now I'm going to go back, change gears just a little bit to 2020. Lockdown, pandemic, isolation. Remember those days? We didn't have a vaccine yet. So all of that was going on. We're still not out of it yet. So the next poem I'm going to read is about my next door neighbor, Carolyn. We live in a semi-detached. And so she had just come back from a trip from Australia, came down with COVID and had to self-isolate for 14 days. I follow Carolyn's comings and goings. Her two daughters arrive in separate cars, unload bags of provisions, casseroles, and suitcases. Self-isolating won't be a problem, Carolyn tells me, standing 6 feet away on the sidewalk in front of our semi-detached homes. At midnight, my bedroom wall vibrates with the hammering sounds of tap dancing. A jazz tap video and photo of her transformed bedroom appear on her Facebook page. Free weights, yoga mat, stationary bicycle, tap shoes, computer crammed into the space. Two vehicles park in front of her house. I feel like Anne Frank, she yells down to her friend through the open window. One friend climbs a stepladder, hands Carolyn a pulley system of knotted belts through the opening. The friend below places a Harvey's takeout bag into a basket attached to a strap. Carolyn hoists the contraption into her room. I was craving a burger and fries, she posts under the photo on Facebook. But I've caught sight of her through the window at daybreak, pulling on her black cap, dark sunglasses, lacing up her runners, bolting down the street. Now, a more personal take on the pandemic and COVID. My husband and I, we had just finished a 10-day tour of Newfoundland. It was a very grueling tour. We all had masks. We were all vaccinated, but we came down with COVID. And as you can remember, you couldn't fly back. So there we were in St. John's, Newfoundland. And my husband developed COVID pneumonia, and he ended up in hospital for 16 days in Newfoundland. Yes, so it was quite the ordeal. So the next poem is in a diary form, chronicling those 16 days to jog his memory, because for the first 6 days, he really wasn't aware of what was going on. And for me to kind of put my thoughts down, because it was very traumatic. So next poem is called My Husband's 16 Days in St. Clair's Mercy Hospital, St. John's, Newfoundland, 2022. They tore down the hospital, by the way, right after we left. It was over 100 years old. So nothing worked. The elevators didn't work, TVs, not anything. So first excerpt, August 15th. On the last day of our Newfoundland tour, we both test positive. A wearing ride. There's the ambulance taking my husband to the hospital. A wearing ride, a taxi ride to Avalon Laboratories to verify rapid COVID tests for travel insurance. We cannot fly back to Ottawa. Your cheeks, an unnatural red. You cough throughout the night. Sweat saturates your pajamas. I'll just wait. My night swarming with what-ifs. August 20, nurses. Two nurses hold you down. Another squeezes your pills between your clenched teeth, pushes them into your mouth. What a workout, they say. Perspiration splotches foreheads and arms, flushes their faces. Tidal waves of panic flood my sleepless nights. I'm terrified of drowning. August 26, prayers. I'm walking the 40 minutes to the hospital, carrying a backpack, purse, Tim Hortons blueberry muffin. "Name's Ernie," he says. His LCBO bottles clink as he wobbles towards me. He asks my name, where I'm going, where the park is. He offers his bus pass, empties his pockets, looking inside out. "Do you have any spare change?" I offer 3 loonies and a few quarters. "I'll pray for your husband," he says, staggering towards the park. So obviously it ended up well because my husband's here. And it's our wedding anniversary today. And I'm just going to read this poem. Birthday party. Maybe death is not the tragedy we imagine, but an unsewn party dress or black suede tuxedo jacket that hangs in the closet waiting. Each year, my husband and I plan our 100th birthday, jokesters that we are. What we'll wear, what we'll eat, who will need a wheelchair, who will or will not be there. Maybe death is an open curtain that lets light in for those whose bodies twist and groan with pain, or those whose minds are prisons of fear. Every year, the guest list dwindles. "What if I die before you?" we ask. "Who will book the dance hall, send out the invites?" Better to get our dance moves right while we can, we say, as we hold each other tight, as we waltz the night away. Thank you very much.
Let's give Doris another hand. Up next, Susan J. Atkinson is an award-winning teacher and poet, born and raised in Northern Staffordshire, England. She now makes her home in Ottawa. After 15 years working as an elementary school teacher, her life has come full circle as she has returned to the film industry, often working alongside her filmmaker husband. In 2023, she was named honorable mention in the New Quarterly's Nick Blanchford Occasional Verse Contest and was longlisted for Exile Editions' Ruth and David Lamp Poetry Award. Her long-listed Sweet Alice, circa 1985, will be published in 2025 by Anstruther Press. Atkinson's debut collection, The Marta Poems, was published by Silver Bow Publishing in 2020, and her second edition, All Things Small, also with Silver Bow, was released in April 2024. Atkinson also writes stories and poetry for children and is the author of 4 picture books published by Little Witch Press. She listed her website, www.susanjatkinson.com. He disappeared. I looked over there and there was a hole there. I'm going, okay, let's bring up Susan.
Thank you. I'm here. Okay. The clock she drew. My father reads an article on cognitive ability in a health magazine about Alzheimer's. Following the doctor's program, he gives my mother nothing but protein and coconut oil at every meal. My father, having tried many cures, prays this could be it. Before he starts this unusual diet, he tests my mother by having her draw a clock face. She cradles the pencil tentatively, as if unsure of what it does, her lack of pressure leaving any light marks on the paper. A clock is not really a clock at all. Scratches like bird prints in sand line the middle of the page. There is no circle. There are no hands. My father thinks this is a good place to start. 2 months later, he tests her again. My mother looks thin, having lost weight, but the clock face remains the same. Thank you. Thank you, everyone, for being here for this wonderful afternoon. And a huge thank you, Bruce. The poem that I just read is also in that amazing anthology that, again, thank you, Bruce. It's a huge honor to read with all of you this afternoon and be here. And I am going to read from my new collection, All Things Small, which came out in April 2024. And so I'll just get on with it. Oh, I also am trying something different where I am reading different poems that I've never read out loud before. We're just going to see how that goes. Because you know how you do that at readings? You always pick your favorites and those little orphans get left behind. So this is the orphans. Pearl. I test your skin as I would a pearl, sucking smoothness to judge its quality. My tongue threads across the fabric of your being, gliding gently over sweet, dewed sweat. Your nectar, your delicate nectar, testimony that you are more precious than if I had tasted salt. As sunlight tilts on its axis. Morning welcomes winter, and a solstice air so cold, frost flowers bloom inside the room. There is no birdsong today. Perhaps I sleep long into the morning as you do, hidden beneath blankets. Today, sunlight tilts in a certain way, glances the gray stubble of your unshaved beard, silver speckles in the furrows of your changing face, older now, but still my love. The season swallows your desire, blurs days into listless gloom. Your passion lies fallow. I cup at any hint of light to share. In a while, I will wake you, bring black coffee and news of the day. Together we will rejoice to the gleam on tufts of fresh snow. And with whispered voices, wish winter well, while hoping for the quick return of daylight and warmth. So All Things Small is divided into five sections, love, sorrow, memory, divorce, and all things small. That's all the other stuff in between, the other stuff. So the first two poems, the two poems I just read are from the section entitled Love, and the next two are from the section Sorrow. And though they're written from a very personal, like the moments in my life, I hope that I've managed to create that sort of familiar, relatable space without making you feel too sad. How can things die on a morning such as this? When the crown of the sun breaches the trees in the backyard and a mug of lemon tea cools on a table fashioned from a tree trunk, it's hard to believe things can die, but they do. Look closely. Already summer blossoms bend their heads. Their brown-tinged leaves hang tired like crepe paper. This is how it happens. A beloved parent dies. Soon the other follows. Loss clasps the space between heart and rib, and grief becomes a shadow, shares its mourning with sorrow. When the crown of the sun breaches the trees in the backyard and a mug of lemon tea cools on a table fashioned from a tree trunk, and when the shadows are at their longest, you can see them holding hands for comfort. The color of morning. Dark lashes fringe the clouds. A storm on its way darkens sky and deadens the melody of birds. A hush lays its heavy hand across the face of the sun. This storm batters the gravel path with sharp slaps of rain, and blackness turns everything inside out, staining aching limbs of pine struggling to remain upright. The color of morning hangs lifeless in the air. I want to love the way the rain inks everything black. I used to, the way it creeps over everything. But a year of loss, a year of wearing the same clothing has changed all of that. The day matches a dress I no longer want. Memory is pleated into wrinkles, shrink its hemline as it haunts the back of the closet. Should it be given away, handed down, or kept? The ghosts impossible to iron out. So sadly, my mother suffered from dementia. She actually lived in the shadow of Alzheimer's for 30 plus years. And the doctors at the Buya Clinic in Ottawa actually speculated from time to time that not only from my father's like abundance of patience and care probably helped her live for that long, but it was also this amazing, incredible love affair that they shared. And so the next section is titled Memory, and it's about memory loss, Alzheimer's, and really it's about love. And I wrote it for my parents. Home. Most days she does not know where she lives. The halls and corridors, an unfamiliar maze. Carnation-sized bruises bloom on the back of her hands from bumping into door frames, tripping over carpet edges. I bring her home for a night, dress her in gloves and boots. It's growing cold for September. I worry, will she sleep? In those early weeks after he died, she would wake hour after hour, wander along our landing, open our bedroom door, searching for him. Tonight, I sleep on an old army cot beside her, wake with every movement, reach out before she rises. She tells me she doesn't want to live here, even though she doesn't know where here is. I ask if she could live anywhere. Where would it be? She wants to be with him again. She wants to go home. For breakfast, I cut grapefruit into half moons, sprinkle sugar cut around the edges of the fruit. I am careful not to pierce the skin where sweetness could seep through into the pit. A storm of blackbirds flaps in her brain. The exam. Shirt, brown, honesty. Her songbirds gossip, lost nouns, scrabble through air. Tuesday clouds spit daisy petals, the rainstorm sweet. She doesn't remember lunch. The clock, bird's feet patterned in pencil dust. A cluster of lily pads, mouths yawning, guzzle river water. She can't remember names. The weight of summer, the balance in the second cutting of hay. She remembers the smell. The wisp of wind catches birch leaves, a sound she spent her life trying to describe. So before I read from another heavy section entitled Divorce, I figured I'd throw something a little lighter in. And this poem is from the last section, All Things Small. And it actually has a nice connection to Kingston because it was published by the Queen's Quarterly in their winter 2021 issue. So I think it's a little lighter. Interpreting Rothko. Faced with a choice, I am torn between number 8, 1953, Lilac and Orange over Ivory, and Untitled, 1956, which, if I were to name it, I would suggest something like Puffs of Snow or Sheep's Coat sandwiched between Charcoal and Ruby. I'm sure neither in their softness would suit Rothko, though my delicate musings about the Ivory would probably also fall flat. Its edges, a lathe frame around a window, cutting blushed peach ripeness of sunset settling into the Aegean Sea, while miles below the cliffs, past the winding streets of a Greek village, in the last of the light, pale to lilac strips, women weave olive branches into fences that stop goats from pattering off rocky ledges. And the wind dies in a curtsied hush, barely audible beneath the bold slabs of color. So the next two poems are from that section I mentioned, Divorce. So I'm sure you've kind of catching on. I'm trying to give you a sampling of each section, just in case you are interested in, you know, making any purchases this afternoon. The books are over here. And I'll just read them. Adultery. Adultery skulks in like a cat through a crack in a door. Its tail gently curves like a question mark, dark and heavy. It appears unannounced, seeking attention. A cat that I do not wish to touch or hold. Cats always go to those who are allergic. Adultery slips in like a cat begging to be caressed and stroked. A question needing answers to complete a sentence and close the door. letting go. Rearranging cupboards and drawers, glasses placed where plates used to go. Sleeping naked, tangled in sheets, the pillows scattered. Walls of a fort collapsed, the bed no longer divided. Pulling down the past, crumbling dried rose petals, bunched brittle memories smelling of age and death and too much past life clenched in their grasp. Neatly packing unwanted items, ready for the garbage. So the next poem is from the final section, All Things Small. And I like to think of it as kind of one of those very typical poet moments, because I'm sure a non-poet in this particular situation would have been a lot more proactive, a lot more productive when faced with this. To the sparrows living in my eaves. Late winter and the clouds bloom white as you lay your nest in the crease between the roof and the eaves. For a month or more, I have watched you toil through early morning frost, a squabbling couple picking up bits and bobs from the tangled remains of last year's garden. I marvel at your strength. A cedar clipping the size of a hand, its green fingers flapping like extra wings as you carry it to the roof. I marvel at your determination as the small cellophane wrapper of processed Gouda cheese stubbornly sticks to the thorns of the rosebush, but you pick and pick until it is free to carry away. I see the edges of the home you are building, its intricate lacing holding it together, keeping it wedged in a crack worn from age and neglect. In these hours, the pleasure of watching you build offsets the truth that you've probably caused all kinds of damage, judging by the tufts of pink insulation, the snow, that snow steadily down. And yeah, sure enough, so after a winter away, we come back in the spring, and my husband asks me, did you notice any of this? And I'm like, well, why, yes, I did. And I wrote a poem about it. Didn't think to call anyone, but hey, you know, that's what we do, right? I just have one final poem that I'd like to end with, but before I do that, like another round of thank yous. Bruce, thank you for bringing us all together, not just today, but over the weekend, for the amazing anthology. And thank you to everyone for being here and, yeah, and not watching the football game. Yeah, I won't tell anyone the score. Lucky I made it here, honestly. So anyway, this last poem, I actually have read at other readings, but it is currently one of my favorites, so I think it makes it okay. And again, it's for my handsome chauffeur, my best friend, my soulmate, so I figure I should at least do that. In this we find ourselves. As summer turns her back, buttoning her coat to meet fall, we escape to a cottage in the woods at the top of a lane. A recent illness has slowed your pace, shrunk your bones, so your shadow now dawdles, falling a step or two behind. While you convalesce gathered in blankets that hem you to the porch, I spend long hours wandering the woods, breathing the trees. No longer a lost babe, I've learned these woods and the years that grow around us. My hair piled into a messy bun invites feathers and grasses to poke through the stray white strands. A nest fit for starlings to rest in. I collect twigs and pebbles, frayed birch bark, pale as oysters, small treasures to set around our table. I fashion teacups from acorn caps, crochet bowls from half-bloomed clusters of Queen's Anne lace. I imagine them filled with fresh-picked blueberries and clouds of cream. These are some of the things that will keep you well. The way the light warms your shoulder. How patience and tenderness hang clasp around whom we have become. The trees that hid our lovemaking when our children were young shake rain-bruised leaves, catch the wind in song, a thousand tinkling tambourines. At dusk, we make friends with a wild rabbit, eat gingerbread dipped in milky tea, and when we took ourselves in for the night, the moon slips through a slit in the curtain, silvering a trail of scattered breadcrumbs leading to our door. Thank you.
Let's give Susan another hand. And for the full round, Ron, Callista, Sue, Doris, and Susan, let's give them all another hand.
And it is 55 minutes after 5 o'clock. You just heard finishing up Sunday's mid-afternoon session at the Poets at Art Fest Festival from this year. Readings by Susan McMaster, Doris Fisher, and Susan J. Atkinson. You are and have been listening to Finding a Voice here on CFRC 101.9 FM. We are located in Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. My name is Bruce. I'm here from 4 to 6 every Friday afternoon. We do stream live online as well at www.cfrc.ca. A heartfelt thanks to all of you for tuning in today as well, to all of those who read Jen Frankel, Honey Novick, Ron Chase, Callista Markotich, Susan, and again, Susan McMaster, Doris Fisher, and Susan J. Atkinson. Please remember that I want to thank them for their wonderful readings and also the crowd that came out to support. Remember, both hours are saved to my blog space for the show at Finding a Voice on cfrcfm.wordpress.com. Please stay tuned for 2 hours of East Coast music and a show called Saltwater Music, hosted by Rob Carnell. Have a great week, everybody.
Friday evenings at 6 p.m. here on CFRC, listen to Saltwater Music, a show covering all musical genres from the East Coast of Canada. Celtic, of course, but also rock, jazz, blues, folk, and a lot more. I'm your host, Rob Carnell. Tune in to Saltwater Music Friday evening from 6 to 8 here on CFRC 101.9 FM. Or you can catch us on the web at www.cfrc.ca. And for our listeners out east, that's 7 p.m. Atlantic and 7:30 Newfoundland.
Folk Everything is your passport to the finest in folk music. Old, new, and everything in between. The wonderful, the wild, and the weird.
Walk quietly by, he won't bother you. He's a busy man, he's got things to do.
It's all here Saturdays from 10 a.m. until 1 p.m. Folk Everything with Hugh on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston.
Our house is a very, very, very fine house.
Late in the 1970s, four Kingston women got together to discuss the idea of creating a community house, a place where grassroots organizations, families, and groups could gather, a place where food could be prepared and shared, new skills could be learned, and lively discussion could be encouraged. For over 30 years, Kingston Community House has provided low-cost meeting space for hundreds of groups, allowing people to come together to learn from one another, share resources, and trade skills. As it becomes safe once again to gather in person, we look forward to providing the Kingston community with a comfortable and convenient place to reconnect with one another. Located in downtown Kingston, we operate 7 days a week. For more information on Kingston Community House and how to book, please visit kingstoncommunityhouse.org.
Indie Wake Up handles your morning. Here for you, Kingston. Weekday mornings from 8 to 10. On the one, the only, CFRC 101.9 FM.
CFRC.